All right. We're back. We're live on YouTube. We're live on TikTok. We got 125, 122 people over on 121 people over on TikTok. We got a room here. We got a studio audience. We got zero people on YouTube. It's all good. We're here. No episode last week. I have been working on two different YouTube videos. I'm making these long form YouTube video essay style videos now, and they're fun. I'm enjoying them, but they're also, they take so much time. They're so much harder than just making a TikTok video. It's so much harder. And Patrick Kennedy's here on YouTube and says, one person on YouTube now. Actually, we have two. There's two. So that's good. But yeah, so I was working on this YouTube video last week, and I just was in the weeds on the edit. I still am in the weeds with it, and I didn't wind up putting out an episode because I just was like, I don't have time. I don't have time to do an episode of the other thing. So we're back now. Still no guest. It's still just me. I literally this week was like, am I going to do an episode? I've been filming a commercial the last 2 days for a fast food chicken restaurant. Guess which one? It's not the one that has the song that goes, it's not that one. It's the other one. It's the one with the guy in the white suit. And he's like, hey, it's that one. And it was fine. It was really easy. It was fun. We had a good time. Yeah, Cane's. Somebody said Cane. That's right. Cane's with the guy in the white suit, and he's like, come on down to Cane's Chicken. It's finger-licking good, you know? Colonel Doofus, I think, is his name. Yeah. But we're back. Whatever. I have a thing we can talk about just between us. I got something that's scratching my noodle that's on my mind that is relevant to what's been going on in my world as a content creator as well. I thought about doing an episode on this last week, and I was like, I don't think I'm ready to talk about this quite yet. And then it kept coming up in the stuff that I was watching and the stuff that I was consuming. So I was like, sure, we'll do it on the podcast this week. We'll do it on the podcast. The title of the episode this week is The Cost of a Lie. And we're sort of just gonna talk about like what happens when you make the choice to tell a lie, and what happens when people lie, and what the domino effect can be, and the ramifications of like one person lying can be, and how big it can get, and how messy and out of control it can get. I'm gonna tell a few stories about some really famous, high-profile lies that people told, and we'll talk about their consequences. And then I'm going to tell you a story about a lie that I told recently. So let's do that. I've been watching all these video essayists on YouTube recently because, like I said, I'm trying to make video essays, and I'm trying to learn from the best out there. I'm trying to watch what they do and study the form a little bit more. So I'm watching a lot of Big Joel. I've been watching a lot of Thought Slime's great, really funny. And I've been watching a lot of like H Bomber Guy. I've always been a fan of ContraPoints. You know, y'all know I love me some Natalie Wynn, but I've been watching some H Bomber Guy, and H Bomber Guy, he has this great video about vaccines and how we came to the place of having the vaccine hesitant or vaccine skeptical or full-on anti-vaccine movement, where it came from, what the science behind the anti-vaccine movement is. And he really comes into it with like the best of intentions of like, let's actually delve into what the ins and outs of both sides of this argument are. What are the origins of it? What are the studies? And the crazy thing about the anti-vaccine movement is more or less it can all be traced back to these two dudes. It can all be traced back to these two like disgraced doctors. This one guy whose name, his last name is Feudenberg or something like that. Doofenshmirtz. I don't know, Dan Povenmire might know. Feudenberg is his name, and he said that he could cure autism by taking his blood out and putting it into autistic people. He was just sort of insane. So I don't know if we can say that Feudenberg is like a huge liar or if he's just sort of an insane person, but whatever. But the other person, Andrew Wakefield, collaborated with Feudenberg on his first study that is like the definitive study that people cite whenever they talk about being vaccine injured or problems with vaccine. It all goes back to this one study that this former doctor named Andrew Wakefield did. And the video's great. You should go watch this video by H. Bomber Guy. It's fantastically researched. It's an amazing video. But essentially, I'm going to give you the nuts and bolts, spoiler alert, small abridged version of it. Andrew Wakefield basically, and this is something that you sort of learn bit by bit in H. Bomber Guy's video, but yes, he lied. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about lies. And he knew he was lying. And Andrew Wakefield was basically a doctor who was hired by a team of attorneys who were involved in a lawsuit against one of the companies that was producing the MMR vaccine, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. And there were some parents who believed because of Feudenberg, because of the other guy, they got the idea in their head because of Feudenberg that the MMR vaccine might have given their children autism. And so this law firm was representing a few parents who felt like they had this legitimate grievance against the makers of this vaccine. And they hired Andrew Wakefield to be their expert witness, their doctor witness, to come in and say, yes, we have definitive proof that these vaccines can be linked to autism. So and they were giving Andrew Wakefield, just offering him a massive amount of money to do this, like way more money than he would make in a year as a doctor in Britain's NHS system. And this man, just quite simply what he did is he made the conscious decision to sell his soul and his dignity and his integrity for a large sum of money. And it wasn't just the money that this law firm was offering him. He came up with the idea as well that, hey, if I'm already doing this, if I'm already making this decision to potentially destroy my reputation and destroy my career for some money, I might as well go all the way in. And so he also decided to patent a alternative vaccine to the MMR vaccine with this other guy, Feudenberg. And he was like, while we're doing this, we might as well also like tell people that we have an alternative vaccine that we can sell them and they can use our vaccine. So he did this study, and it's, again, it's the study. This is the study that, like, Jenny McCarthy was talking about. This is the study that, like, Jim Carrey and all the, and Bill Maher, this is the study. And he did this study to try and find a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. And it's just a total nothing burger. The study is completely inconclusive. It does not prove definitively in any way, doesn't even have like interesting data, does not prove definitively in any way that there is any evidential link between the MMR vaccine and autism. All the study shows is that like a lot of these different parents were reporting that their child changed after getting the MMR vaccine within a few weeks. So the only thing the study put forward is like, we've got these parents who are saying that their child was noticeably different. And it establishes this timeline of like within 4 weeks of getting the MMR vaccine, we have these different parents who are noticing these changes. And it's like, that's it. That's the only piece of evidence that the study has. It is in no other way able to conclusively offer anything. There's nothing else in the study. And, you know, interestingly enough, whether a child is vaccinated or not, symptoms of autism appear in children most commonly around the same age that children are vaccinated. So essentially that linkage that a lot of parents were noticing is just coincidental. It's just like at the same age that a child gets vaccinated is around the same age that parents will first start noticing symptoms of autism. And that's just all it is. That's all it was, is just these two things happen around the same time. and a bunch of parents were looking for a reason, like, why did my child all of a sudden change? It must have been that shot that they got. So a few parents sued that company. The law firm that was suing them hired Andrew Wakefield to be their quote-unquote expert witness and to do a study to find some kind of linkage. He had a lot of money on the line. He decided, I'm going all in. I'm selling my integrity. I'm going to also patent an alternative vaccine that I can sell to people once I tell them that this MMR vaccine can't be trusted, and I'm going to make a bunch of money, but I'm going to tell this lie. And that's the story. That's the entire story. This whole thing. And so if we're doing an episode called The Cost of a Lie, what was the cost of Andrew Wakefield's lie? I think in his mind, he probably initially thought of it as like, I'm going to be sacrificing a little bit of integrity here, you know, but it's something that he probably thought, but only I'm going to know. And initially, Andrew Wakefield was very much like, I'm not anti-vaccine. He was really, really, really clear that he was like, this is not anti-vaccine. Vaccines work. The thing that he kept saying early on was, I just think that the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, it could be problematic when they're all put together. So if you get the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine all together, his hypothesis was they all could work together to cause autism. But if you get them all separately, you won't get autism. Doesn't make any sense. There's no scientific basis for why he said that, other than that he had alternative vaccines that he was patenting that he wanted to sell to people after he got them to not take the MMR vaccine. So he would say, I'm not anti-vaccine. Still get your kids vaccinated. Just get my vaccine that I'm going to sell you later. And I think in his mind, he was probably like, no one's going to get hurt because I'm not telling anyone to not vaccinate their kids. So there won't be any, like, there's not going to be a body count to this lie. I'm just going to have to, like, fib a little bit and fudge the margins a little bit. But, like, at the end of the day, I'm still encouraging people to get vaccinated. They're just going to be buying their vaccine from me instead of some other company. So who cares, right? Really, no harm, no foul. Except here we are, close to 30 years after Andrew Wakefield made his really bad lie of a study, and we're still dealing with the ramifications of his lie. We're still dealing with just an entire wave of people across the entire world who no longer think that vaccines are safe, or that there's a science to vaccines that can be trusted, who no longer trust the overwhelming majority, the global majority of medical scientists who are like, trust us, this stuff works, because of what Andrew Wakefield did. And absolutely, the result of Andrew Wakefield's work was that people became anti-vaccine, not just anti-MMR vaccine, but anti-vaccine period, anti-COVID vaccine, anti-any vaccine, anti-polio vaccine, anti-any of it. And yeah, there absolutely is a massive body count to Andrew Wakefield's lie, an overwhelming one, and not just people who have died, but people who have been estranged from their families. It's kind of incalculable, the damage that this man did with this decision to just tell this lie. And it's like, if you're wondering, like, how does Austin know all this stuff? How does he know that? Like, again, I would suggest going and watching H Bomber Guy's video on this, but also, like, this is all, like, very easy. You can go and look up Andrew Wakefield's study and read it. That's the thing. That's the real thing, is like, we have some culpability in some of these things too, because we just don't tend to be all that keen on, when people talk about doing their own research, like, no, we don't. Like, we're not actually interested in going and reading Andrew Wakefield's study for ourselves and then trying to replicate the experiments that he did. Andrew Wakefield came up with this fake disease that he was looking for called autistic endocolitis, which is essentially, he was saying that, like, bacteria from the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine gets caught in the colon of children and morphs into autism somehow. Doesn't make any sense. It's a fake disease that he made up so that he could be saying what he was looking for. But, like, you could go and try to, like, replicate the things that he was doing. You wouldn't want to. They involve, like, a lot of child abuse and a lot of, like, really bad things. Andrew Wakefield was just kind of a bad guy. But at the end of the day, a lot of people just sort of took his word for it. And that's the other, that's another big cost of a lie, like the lie that Andrew Wakefield told, is it just sows seeds of doubt in anyone wearing a lab coat and purporting to be a professional from then on. Because if you can look at a person like Andrew Wakefield and go, okay, well, that guy was willing to tell a massive supervillain level lie for some money, why would the other people in the lab coats not be willing to tell a massive supervillain lie for money? And like people who were skeptical of Big Pharma, like that we gave so much agency and so much like control to Big Pharma during the COVID pandemic that is ongoing. I'm like, yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. There's so much corruption in Big Pharma. Purdue Pharma is such a massively corrupt company. You're not wrong to be skeptical of people who stand in front of you and say, don't worry, this thing that we made, it's safe. You can take this thing. But like a lot of times, that stuff, like the reason why it's like really hard to trust people who are arguing from authority, who are standing in front of you saying a lot of big, you know, scientific sounding words and publishing studies in well-respected scientific journals, a lot of the reason why they can't be trusted is because a small handful of them were willing to tell really big lies. And it poisons the well for like everyone. So again, it's just like the cost, the ramification. It's just the ripple effect is massive, untold. The damage that Andrew Wakefield's lie did. Let's go to another one. This is another H Bomber Guy video that I watched. There was another one that H Bomber Guy did that I also recommend you go watch, and it's on climate change. And it's sort of a similar thing, asking the same question of like, how did we get to a place where so many people are so skeptical of vaccines and vaccine technology? Asking the exact same question, how did we get to a place where so many people are so readily accepting of climate change denial, even though the climate change denial science is so like non-existent and so bad and so like demonstrably bad and so like kind of laughably bad? How are we here? How are there so many people who are so convinced that like the overwhelming majority of scientists in the world are lying or are part of some hoax to convince us that a thing is happening that simply is not happening? And again, it's another scenario where it's like we've got people who are arguing from a place of authority who are selling their integrity on a lie that they know is a lie. And one of the people that, and there's a few more people in this one than there are with vaccines. With vaccines, it's literally like you can trace it all back to Andrew Wakefield and this other guy, Feudenberg. Like you can, I can't remember if his name is Feudenberg or Fundenberg. I can't remember what his name is. Feudenberg? I can't, who cares? Whatever. But with climate change, we've got a lot more of these people who are peddling this bad science for money and for clout, who know that they're lying. But there are still some people that are like the staples that everyone points to. All of the people that are peddling the bad science around climate change denial are pointing to the same handful of like, if this guy said so, then come on, there's got to be something to it. And one of the big people that H. Bomber Guy points out is this guy named Patrick Moore, who was a former Greenpeace activist who decided to sell his soul and his integrity to the Koch brothers and be a shill for them and pretend that climate change isn't real. Yeah, somebody said in the comments on YouTube, it's Fundenberg, put a little asterisk next to every time I said Feudenberg earlier in the episode and say Fundenberg and also say who the fuck cares. And fuck that guy forever. But climate change denial. Patrick Moore is now a guy, he gets asked to speak at places, and he goes around talking about how certain glaciers in certain places are growing, and the climate change scientists are lying to you because they're saying this glacier's shrinking, but this glacier over here is growing, and that's just what glaciers do. Sometimes they grow, and sometimes they shrink, and he's going around peddling all of this misinformation, and he's doing it because there's a paycheck in it for him. It really is crazy. It's insane how many people do these in like horrid things for money. capitalism really is the root of all of this stuff. It's I have an episode on this show called A Crash Course in Far-Left Extremism, and everything kind of comes back to capitalism. Everything in far-left extremism kind of comes back to, like, if we can dismantle capitalism, we can tackle a lot of these rotting systems that aren't working, rotting, ineffective, bad systems. But yeah, it's like, how often do you watch a movie where the bad guy's villain is, or where the bad guy's motivation is money, and you think, like, oh God, they couldn't come up with something more interesting than that? It's always just like money. I want to do it because of money. But it's like, in real life, our real life supervillains, more often than not, are doing what they're doing because of money. Like, every real life supervillain is doing what they're doing because of money. It's crazy. It's crazy what a good motivator money is to get people to just be straight up evil. I was talking with someone the other day about, like, how insane it is to be a billionaire, and how just, like, if you were a person who was worth $50 billion, you could, without stressing it, without sweating it, you could just go into, like, a major metropolitan urban area and be like, I'm going to buy up a ton of real estate, cash. I'm going to just pay cash for, like, all these buildings on these, like, several city blocks. I'm going to just own them all, and I'm going to convert them into housing for unhoused people, and they get to live there rent-free, and I never need to hear about it. And they can just go and live. It can just be theirs. And people can be mad about it. People can be like, you can't do that. They're going to do drugs in there. And you can just be like, I don't care. They can do whatever they want in there. They can do as many drugs as they want in there. I don't care. However they want to get food, whatever. They don't have to pay rent. They can live in there rent free. And I'm just going to give it to them because I can. And it won't even bother me. It won't do anything. I won't even notice it. It, like, my bank account, my finances will be nonplussed. I won't even notice it. And every day, every living billionaire is like, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to start a fund. I'm going to start a foundation, a charitable foundation that's tax-free, for with which to funnel my money through, that occasionally will do good things for, like, here and there. But mostly it's just a tax haven for me. That's what I'm going to do with my money instead. That's evil. And it's all just for money. For money they don't even need. For, like just surplus amounts of money. For just, like, I'll just be straight up evil for an extra amount of money that if it were not in my life, I wouldn't even know. If like, tomorrow somebody stole $5 billion from Elon Musk and, like, nobody told his financial advisors and, like, he wouldn't know. They wouldn't know. They'd just be like, it went down a little bit. It's all right. It'll come back up. It's insane. But yeah, that's what anyway, the climate change denial. And it's funny how bad the science is in the climate change denial too, because people like Patrick Moore will go around and they'll literally go to conferences and speak on this, and they'll have, like, a big, you know, like, visual display behind them where they'll show a graph of, you know, a glacier in Greenland that climate scientists are watching, and they'll go, like, look at this graph right here. This comes from NASA. This comes from climate change scientists. Look, the graph is going back up over the last 10 years. There it was going down, and now it's going back up. Billions of feet of ice have been restored to this glacier. So they're lying to us. It's growing again. And, like, here's how we know Patrick Moore and everyone else that shows graphs like this is lying, is all you have to do, all any person that's interested in getting to the bottom of this has to do, is just, like, zoom out on the graph and be like, oh, how interesting. That glacier's getting bigger in the last couple years. That's so interesting. What does it look like over 30 years or 50 years or 100 years? Is it the same? Is it down and then back up? Nope, it's just down. It's just a diagonal line down that occasionally has little pulses that go up. And that's it. It's just down, up, down, up, down, up, down for like the last 100 years. That's what it is. It's just like, oh, okay. So there's no way that Patrick Moore, when he goes and speaks on this, isn't aware of that. There's no way he doesn't know that he's showing a smaller portion of the graph to intentionally lie about the existence of climate change and to lie about the fact that those glaciers are significantly smaller today than they were 50 years ago. And they're shrinking at an alarming rate, and that they do occasionally, based on the tilt of the Earth and the Earth's axis, they do occasionally have colder years where they grow, and they might grow for like a couple years straight, but overall, the overall effect of the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is that they are quickly shrinking. That's the big, and like, that's it. It's that stupid. Like, it's just like Andrew Wakefield's thing where it's like everyone in vaccine skepticism is like, there's science out there. You got to follow the science. And then it's like, if you go to the science, it's one study by one guy where he was like, these parents noticed that around the same time that their children were vaccinated, they started seeing symptoms of autism. The end. And then the study ends with him being like, we were not able to prove a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. That's how the study ends. And it's like, we couldn't do it. And then anyone that like replicated his studies were like, yeah, you can't do it. It's not there. And then that's how climate change denial is, the science is too, is like, they'll show you these little like influxes in growth or, you know, in variation in the climate. And they'll go, see? But then if you just zoom out and look at the totality of the data, it's like, oh, it says the exact opposite of what you're saying it says. And it's that simple. It's just a stupid lie that a handful of people are saying for money. And so let's talk about the cost of – oh, I want to talk about one more thing too about Patrick Moore before I talk about the cost of Patrick Moore's lie and the lie of against climate change. The reason why one of my favorite clips from Patrick Moore, the reason why we definitely, definitely, definitely know he's a liar, even though like we don't really need much more evidence than what we have. But there's a clip of Patrick Moore. He was going around being a shill for the Koch brothers because they were involved in this lawsuit where a pesticide that they produced was being linked to cancer in the blood of workers who were using this pesticide. And so he went around saying there's nothing wrong with this pesticide. It's totally safe because he doesn't care about lying for money. And that's what he was doing. And while he was on this little speaking tour saying there's nothing wrong with this pesticide, it's totally safe, one of the interviewers that he was doing an interview with went, would you drink the pesticide? Because he goes, you could drink it and you'd be fine. You could drink this pesticide and be fine. And the interviewer goes, would you drink the pesticide? And he goes, totally, I'd drink it. And the guy goes, all right, I just so happen to have some right here. Will you drink a cup of it in front of us to prove what you're saying? And he goes, no, I'm not going to drink it. I'm not an idiot. Like, that's what he says. On camera, he's like, well, no, I'm not an idiot. He's doing this tour where he's telling people you can drink this pesticide that's been linked to blood cancer. And he says, you can drink it. It's totally fine. And then somebody's like, will you drink it? And he's like, no. So he just is out in the world knowing that he's full on lying and not caring. And I want you to pay attention to what I just said. Knowing he's lying and not caring. Also talking to an audience that knows that he's lying and doesn't care. And I want you to pay attention to that because that's going to come up later in the episode. That's going to be relevant later on. This idea of people who know they're lying and an audience that knows they're probably lying but doesn't care. Because the conservative audience that Patrick Moore is talking to, that Steven Crowder is talking to when he does climate denial, that like these people are peddling these lies to, by and large, like, they need something that sounds like a scientific justification for their ideology, so they don't care if what's being fed to them can be easily disproved. They're not really concerned with whether or not it's actually true. They just like the idea that someone who's like vaguely well-spoken and who can be used as a figure to argue from authority is saying the thing that they need them to say for them to be like, well, that guy is also a scientist and he said my thing. So the end. But they don't actually care to go and find out if it's true or not. In fact, I think a lot of these people are like, I probably kind of know that it's not true, but I just like what's important to me is my ideology, is my allegiance to this ideology. So it doesn't really matter. And that's kind of beyond money or anything else. That kind of comes to define conservatism, because only a handful of people at the top are actually getting rich and getting paid off to sell their integrity. But the rest of these people who like are giving them the money, who are funding the grift, they're not getting rich, so what are they doing it for? Why are they involved in it? Well, we're going to talk about that later. Put a pin in that. Let's talk about the cost of Patrick Moore's lies and the cost of the lies of climate change denial. Just everything, right? So it was incalculable to try to tally up the cost of Andrew Wakefield's lie. This one's like somehow bigger. It's like just everything, just the planet we live on. It just costs the health of the planet we live on, the longevity of the planet, our atmosphere, the breathability of our atmosphere is at stake with this lie. And people are giving that up for what? Yeah, some of them for money, but some of them just to not agree with the libs, just to like own the libs, just to wreck them. It's fucking insane what the situation that we're in, why people are so dug in on this stuff. And the vast majority of these people are not getting paid to be this dug in. It's just like, I just need my team to be opposed to your team. I just need it. Okay? So if your team says that climate change is real, I gotta have my team say it's not. And it doesn't matter if that's true or not. I can't agree with you. I have to not agree with you. And I have to feel like I'm dunking on you somehow by showing this part of the graph that says that the glacier's going back up a little bit. Another big lie that I'll talk about before I get to the lie that I told. We'll get into that juicy part, but just it's one more thing. This is one where I'm like, this is an interesting, it's a little bit of a different, so this movie's out right now. You might have heard of it. It's called Oppenheimer. It's about J. Robert Oppenheimer, who made the atomic bomb. And I'm not going to really talk about the movie very much. I just wanted to sort of talk about this guy, like, and what these people told themselves at this time to justify doing what they were doing. And what they all told themselves, the story that was being told was, it's us or them. Germany's making a bomb. We have to make a bomb too. And there's a race for who's going to get there first. And that was the big like driving engine to doing this thing without really thinking like, what does this bomb mean? What are the ramifications for this bomb? So it's not like, anyone was lying about the science behind the bomb. We know that they weren't. It's not like anyone was lying about the fact that we were in a war, that we were engaged in the Second World War of that century. We were, and the stakes were high. But then this interesting thing happens where like Germany surrenders before we finish the bomb. And it's like, okay, well, the engine that was driving us making this thing is now taken away, but we're close to making it. And like, we really want to finish it. And we really want to use it too. So we got to come up with like a story. And so it's like, well, Japan's really like they, and people will still talk about this today. They'll be like, well, Imperial Japan, like they were not going to stop. There was no way to end that war except for to do what we did. And it's like, is that, and this is an interesting like lie to talk about, because it's a little murkier than the others. It's not as cut and dry. It's like, it's more of like a story. It's more of a narrative that we've sort of crafted as a country and told ourselves for decades to justify doing what we did. But that's because I think we're all still sort of psychologically reeling from what we did. And there's this great line in that movie. I will just talk about this line from that movie where Oppenheimer, Oppie, says they won't fear it until they understand it, and they won't understand it until they've used it. And that's exactly what happened, right? Like, we just, like, we had to light that fuse. We couldn't stop ourselves. It's like, well, we were so close to the finish line. We had to get, we just had to, like, see what would happen. We had to do it. So we justified it by any means necessary, just justified using it. We still, to this day, like to tell ourselves stories as to why that was okay, what we did. But the reality of it is, like, the cost of that story we're telling ourselves is, like, we live in the echo of that invention. And we live in the chain reaction that was started with that invention. And that is something we can't take back. And we don't, I don't think we fully grasp what the cost is yet. I think we're still sort of like trying to come to terms with what the cost is. And I don't think we fully understand what the cost is of that story. It can't be taken back. It's done. It can't be undone. It can't be undid. We can't untell the story. We can't undrop the bomb. But it's absolutely true that the world, and our government in particular, did not sufficiently fear or understand that weapon until it was used. And after it was used, I mean, here we are, almost 100 years later, and everyone in the world is still like, let's never do that again. Let's have them in case somebody does it, but let's all kind of like never do that again. And we don't, I mean, we're all sitting in a world every single day where like somebody could push that button. And we're all just like, I hope nobody pushes that button ever again. But the fact remains that the cost of telling whatever story we needed to tell to get there means that we now live in that world where someone can push that button any day. And I again, the potential cost is everything. It's all of it. It's all of our collective lives, all of our collective consciousnesses, all of it. So those are some very big, very consequential lies. I want to talk about the lie that I told recently. And I really want to make it clear that, like, I'm not intending to shy away from the reality of what I did. I consciously told a lie. And I had a reason why I was doing it. I had a story I was telling myself. And I have a feeling that my lie was nowhere near as consequential as the lies I just talked about. Nonetheless, there's a cost associated with it. There has to be. There's no way around it. And I think that that's sort of the thing about these actions, because I think a lie fundamentally is a violent act. I think it's an act of violence, and I think that fundamentally, there is no way to get around violent actions having a cost, having some kind of consequence. Now, I don't think that moral absolutism really works in a realistic sense in the world all the time. I think there are things that we say like, don't hit someone. Hitting people is bad. Don't intentionally hurt someone. Don't attack someone, don't kill someone. And in that same space, you know, don't steal from someone, don't lie to someone are wrapped up in there too. And then there's always these, but for all of those things that we can all agree, don't do those things, there's always a time when you might have to do those things, or when doing those things might be called for or might make more sense. The situation that comes up often is it immoral or wrong or unethical to punch a Nazi? See somebody out in public wearing a Nazi armband, waving a Nazi flag, spouting white supremacist propaganda. You can go up and try to have an argument with them, but some people might throw on a little face mask and run over and sucker punch them in the side of the head, the way that somebody did with Richard Spencer years ago. The conversation can be had, even if it's Richard Spencer, even if it's a full-blown white nationalist spreading white nationalist propaganda. Is it useful? Is it productive to punch him? I don't know. What Richard Spencer puts out into the world is violent. What Richard Spencer invokes with his language and his ideology is violence. What Richard Spencer stands for and does is bad. Opposing Richard Spencer is not bad. Standing in opposition firmly to Richard Spencer's ideology is not bad. Is punching Richard Spencer in the nose or in the jaw bad? I don't know. There's going to be a cost, potentially. You could get brought up on assault charges. Richard Spencer could sue you. And you wouldn't really have a lot of recourse. In court, a lawyer could show a tape and be like, here's my client standing, not harming anyone, and this other person comes up on the side of him and sucker punches him, blind punches him in the side of the head. Could have killed him. What if he hit him in the side of the head, split his skull, caused some hemorrhaging in the brain, killed him? What if he fell down, hit his head on the pavement, died? That's assault. That's attempted murder. There's going to be a cost to taking that violent action, even if you feel like you can justify that violent action. Came across a guy named Jeff Mead on TikTok. There's this song, this Jason Aldean song, Try That in a Small Town. A bunch of people were talking about it online because that's what people do online. They comment on media. They comment on art. We got takes from people on the right about how woke Barbie is. We got people commenting about whether or not we should have a movie about J. Robert Oppenheimer. We got people commenting on this Jason Aldean song because it really felt like the song had a lot of racial dog whistles in it. And if you look at the lyrics, in my estimation, that's an accurate estimation of the song. I feel like Jason Aldean and the people who wrote the song and the people who made the music video knew what they were doing and were very intentional with the imagery that they put into the song and into the music video. They intentionally made a song that was dog whistling to a certain person, a certain fear of people from a certain region in the world. There's sort of this fear fantasy that conservatives in the South have of, like, and even if you take race out of the equation, like this sort of fear fantasy of like radical Antifa leftists coming into their town and like them shutting them down and showing them who's boss in their small town. And it's a violent fantasy. It's a fantasy of like doing violence to their ideological foes. But in that violent fantasy of showing their ideological foes who's boss, there is a long, rich history of racial violence, of conservative white Southern people doing violence to black and brown and indigenous people in the name of standing up for their small town. There's a history of sundown towns and small towns where people with dark skin were not welcome after the sun went down. And there's a lot of things, there's a lot of imagery. Jason Aldean shot the music video for the song in front of a courthouse where a famous lynching took place. There's a newspaper article that is referenced in the music video that is from a famous historical racially charged event. There's all kinds of things laced throughout this entire song that created the environment for the media criticism that it got, for people to say this song really feels problematic in a lot of ways. And I think it's been said by other creators, and I'll just echo that like, even if you take the race element out of it, Jason Aldean's song is like weirdly advocating for violence and for vigilantism, which is like not legal. It's advocating for like doing violence to people for exercising their First Amendment right of free speech, which is something that people on the right seem to always want to support and be for. He talks about like flag burning, which is protected free speech by the First Amendment, and insinuates that he will do harm to you if he catches you doing that in a small southern town, and that the people who listen to that that song and see it as an anthem for them and their ideology will do violence to you if they catch you exercising your First Amendment free speech. And anyway, I came across this guy named Jeff Mead. Conservative guy, black guy, kind of running that grift that Candace Owens runs, where, and I found him through my friend JJ, who's been on the podcast, at J William J, if you know that creator, great creator, because he had kind of done a few back and forths with JJ, where he would like stitch clips of JJ's videos, where he would take JJ out of context and then like make disingenuous bad faith arguments against what JJ was saying. And I was like, well, if that guy watched JJ's video like I did, then he knows that that's not what JJ was saying in that video, but he's taking a clip from JJ's video where it's making it sound like JJ's saying something he's not, and then Jeff Mead is responding to only that clip so that he can have a response that sounds like a good argument. Again, this is that stuff where I'm saying, like, the audience doesn't care if it's true or not. They don't care if Jeff Mead's actually winning. They just need to have Jeff Mead to have an argument that gives the appearance of winning, just like they don't care if Patrick Moore's graph that he's showing them about climate change is accurate or not. They just need their talking heads to have some kind of response. So, and Jeff Mead knows this. Like, the grift that Jeff Mead is running, and I felt this by just looking through his content, is he's just giving his audience some kind of response to left-wing voices. So when people on the left say something, Jeff Mead's there to say they're wrong and say the opposite. And it doesn't matter if Jeff Mead actually has a strong argument against what they're saying. As long as he can clip something that they said and create something that sounds like a rebuttal to what they were saying, that's all that matters. That's all that matters, is the feeling like Jeff got him. And so I was looking at Jeff's content, and mostly Jeff's content is him criticizing the black community and sort of being a conservative voice for black criticism, where like most white conservative content creators, if they spent all of their time criticizing black people, it would be like too mask off. Like, Steven Crowder definitely does a lot of criticizing communities of color and being racist. But if Steven Crowder spent all of his time criticizing communities of color and being racist, it would be like too obvious that Steven Crowder is racist. But since Jeff Mead's black, Jeff Mead can spend the majority of his time on his platform criticizing black people. And people can be like, well, but Jeff Mead's black, so Jeff Mead can't be racist. And it gives them that sort of like weird out. Anyway, Jeff Mead was saying why Jason Aldean's song isn't racist by pretending not to understand the arguments that people were making really bad arguments like, the song doesn't have any racial dog whistles in it. The song doesn't even mention race. And that was the argument that I first responded to. I was like, well, Jeff, that's what a dog whistle is. If the song had explicitly mentioned race, it would not have been dog whistling. It would have been explicitly racist. That's what dog whistles are, Jeff. But I was like, I think you know that. I think you're pretending not to know that to give your audience one of these bad faith, disingenuous arguments. Jeff responded to me and said, well, if the dog whistles exist, how come only people on the left are hearing them? And he stitched a clip of my video where I'm explaining what dog whistles are, and then he made that response. So again, to people in Jeff's audience, it's like, ooh, hoo, hoo, burn, sick, burn, ooh, Jeff got him. If the dog whistles exist, how come only people on the left are hearing them? And the thing about the clip that Jeff stitched from me is, I go on to say why that is. I like, if you just keep playing the clip, I'm like, yeah, but like anybody who's sociopolitically aware has heard these dog whistles before and is aware of them and knows how to recognize them. So like, dog whistles are designed for racists to be able to speak to each other in code, but anti-racist people who are engaged in this work are capable of understanding dog whistles when they see them, because we've heard them all before. They're not that unique. They're not that clever. They're not that smart. They're not that hard to point out or to see. And that's why we can hear them. So like, I answered the question in the video, but Jeff doesn't show his audience that, of course, because like, that's not what's entertaining. And that's not what Jeff's audience wants. They want him to make the thing. So Okay. So Patrick Kennedy says, "Oh, right. Now I know the lie you did." Yeah. So we're getting to it. So I see Jeff Meade doing this thing that I see him do all the time where he's clipping me out of context. And I get this idea because I'm like, oh, well, now I got him. Now I got him. Like, I got him straight up misusing a clip of me to make a bad faith argument. So I come up with this idea to basically Ocean's 12 Jeff. If you've ever seen the movie Ocean's 12, Danny and the gang, they all team up with Terry Benedict, who's the bad guy from the first movie, played by Andy Garcia. So Terry Benedict is the bad guy who was married to Tess, Danny's ex-wife, Julia Roberts, in the first movie. And in the second movie, or no, this is the third movie, Ocean's 13. So I Ocean's 13'd, or no, yeah, third movie, Ocean's 13'd him. They team up with Terry Benedict in the third movie, and they tell Terry that they're going to give him half of whatever they steal from Al Pacino at the end of the movie. And at the end of the movie, when it's time to give Terry his portion of the money, they tell Terry that they donated his money to charity. And basically, it puts Terry in a position where he has to, like, either ask for that money back to, like, he has to, like, take that money back from charity, or he has to accept the fact that, like, they played him. And so that was my idea. I was like, I'm going to get Jeff to show his audience the full clip to show them that, like, he intentionally clipped me out of context so that he could make this stupid retort. And my idea was like, I bet he's going to do it because I'm going to offer him money to do it. I'm sure he'll do it. So I'm saying something here about how, like, Jeff's integrity is 100% for sale. He doesn't care. Like, Jeff's only in this to grow an audience and to get money. That's why Jeff's doing it. That's why Jeff's involved in the right wing grift. That's why Jeff's doing what he's doing. And also, his audience won't care. It won't matter. This is not going to, like, cancel Jeff Meade. People aren't going to leave in droves. They're not going to be like, oh my God, Jeff's been clipping people out of context and lying. Like, they know that's what Jeff does. That's like 90% of what he does on his profile. They don't care. My whole idea was like, watch how easy it will be for me to get Jeff Meade to admit that he's lying, and also watch how no one will care. The same thing with like showing up and being like, hey, Patrick Moore, drink this pesticide right now. And him being like, no. And Patrick Moore just admitting on camera that he lies and that he's a liar. And no one who goes to Patrick Moore for climate change denial evidence cares. No one cares that there's footage out there of Patrick Moore saying that he's lying. No one on the right cares that Donald Trump said, here's the game plan. If we ever lose an election, I'm just going to say the other team cheated. Nobody cares. They don't care that he said, we're just going to do this if we ever lose the election. This is exactly how I'm going to lie to you and the lie I'm going to tell. And here I am on camera so many times saying it. Nobody gives a shit because what they care about is being on that team and rooting for that ideological team and presenting the illusion of winning. So I had this idea to Ocean's 13 Jeff and say, hey, Jeff, I'm going to pay you some money if you show your audience the full clip. I figured there was a very small chance that he wouldn't do it. I was like, of course he's going to take it. He wants to get paid. He did it. And what I did, and this was my plan all along, is I was like, great, thank you, Jeff, for doing that. And I donated your money to these racial justice organizations. So I donated in his name to Black Lives Matter, the Sentencing Project, and an organization called Black Girls Smile that does advocacy for mental health for black women, amongst other things. So I felt really comfortable with like my end of the deal. I was like, I feel good about it. And to me, it felt kind of smooth in the moment, but really quickly, I started to sort of like feel like something wasn't quite right. Like, and I started to realize that like, regardless of how I was justifying what I was doing, because in my brain, I was just scamming a scammer. I was showing how the wheels of this like right-wing grift work. And I was trying to justify it that way. But at the end of the day, like in order to do it, I did lie, and there were just comment after comment after comment from people who were like, but you lied. But you lied. And I'm just kind of going, yeah, we're sort of being moral absolutists about this. We're going, lying equals bad. Austin lied, therefore Austin equals bad. But it's like, yeah, but don't we don't we lie sometimes to liars? Don't we scam scammers sometimes? There's like entire genres of content where people do this. Like, I love Walter Masterson, great content, and he dresses up like a MAGA person and goes to Trump rallies and tricks them into thinking that he's one of them to get content out of them. And that's like a lie that he's telling, but it makes for like really revealing content about these people and really entertaining and like fun content. And I don't think that like Walter Masterson should stop doing that. But I just, for me personally, I was like, and here's the thing. I'm not saying this right now because I feel like I'm like the walls are closing in or I'm getting canceled or anything like that. I'm not getting canceled. In the time since I did that deal with Jeff Green or Jeff Mead, my audience has grown by like 17,000 new followers, and like my Instagram audience grew by like 4,000 people, and I even gained like 1,000 subs on YouTube. Like, it's, I'm fine. I'm not getting canceled. My audience overwhelmingly is fine with what I did. Like, over, like, people, in, like, Jeff made this whole video about how my audience is turning on me and how my audience even thinks that I should have paid him. And I'm like, no, it was a very, very, very small amount of people who were followers of mine who felt disappointed. And a small amount in my audience still amounts to like several hundred people. So like, if I'm being generous, and the amount of people from my own audience that I saw being like, oh man, I'm kind of disappointed that you did it this way. Honestly, I probably saw like 100 comments like that, but let's be generous and say that there were 500 people. Let's be even more generous and say that there were 1,000 people who follow me who were disappointed by this tactic. That's not an insignificant amount of people who used to go to me as a voice of what they felt was honest and reliable and clear, who now felt like, well, now I don't, you know, even though it's like, I think that it's like, hey, look, I'm not just lying to you about any old thing, and I'm not lying to you, the audience. I lied to Jeff, and I gave the money to charity. Like, it's fine. This is me running through and like saying, like, trying to evaluate the cost. Who was hurt here? Was anyone hurt? Is Jeff Mead hurt by not having 1,000 of my dollars? Did I do harm to him? And even if I did, is it bad to do harm to a person like Jeff who peddles misinformation and white supremacist propaganda? Is that, like, I don't know. These are the Richard Spencer question. But there definitely did seem to be a cost associated, and I kept getting back to this idea of like, regardless of whether the majority of my audience is okay with the tactic I used, I think at the end of the day, the things that I can really own about this are, this was not my best work. This was sloppy. The way that I executed it was sloppy. The language that I used, the specificity of the language that I used, muddied what I was trying to say overall. It made the overall goal of like the stunt I was trying to pull kind of muddy. And I also don't know if it was necessary. It's like, there's plenty of evidence out there that Jeff Mead does this, that he clips people out of context. And I could have just said, hey, Jeff Mead clipped me out of context. This is what he does. And I could have just left it at that. And so overall, it's like, I got this idea in my head to do this stunt that I felt like was going to be this cool thing. And at the end of it all, it's like, you know, I don't know. Now I got like just hundreds of thousands of Jeff stans up my ass. And I don't really care about those people. They're in the comments right now on this live. They're in the comments on YouTube. I see you. I see you every single day. They're super butthurt about it. They're like really, really mad about it. And I kind of like it. Like, I'll be honest. I kind of like that part. Like, I kind of think it's like hilarious. Like, how upset Jeff's fans are about this, because I basically just like did to them what they normally do to other people. I just sort of like trolled the trolls. I grifted the grifters. I conned the con artists. And it's like breaking their minds that they didn't get to win. Like, what they wanted out of the situation was to win. Again, they don't care that Jeff showed them the full context of my clip and that it shows that Jeff does this thing where he clips people out of context so that he can make disingenuous arguments. They don't care. What they care is that I bet Jeff money he wouldn't show them the full clip, and he did. And in their minds, that meant that they got to win, that I was going to pay Jeff money and they would win. They didn't care if at this point, like, whether or not Jason Aldean's song is racist is completely gone. Like, we're completely off of that topic, and no one cares anymore about, like, who had the better argument, who had the better media analysis and media comprehension when it came to Jason Aldean's song. All they care about is Jeff Mead should have Austin Archer's money, and that makes us feel good. And the fact that he doesn't have my money and I'm not going to give it to him is making them so mad. like they've just been in my comments for the last 10 days just seething about it. And like, I will admit that, like, that part, there's a part of my heart that kind of loves that part. But there's also a part of me that, like, wants to be on the correct side of things, that wants to be the person with more integrity, that wants to be the person who comes at things from an intellectually honest place, that's like, this was sloppy work. This was not my best work. This was not necessary. And I'm in evaluating the cost of this, because there has to be a cost. I think that the cost that I need to live with is this does something to my reputation. This puts a stain on my integrity and on my desire to be an intellectually honest content creator. And I have to eat that. I have to accept that. So if there are people in my audience, even right now, if this is the first you're hearing of it, and hearing this story, if it made you think like, oh, geez, I don't like the way that that makes me feel about Austin, I think that that's valid and that you get to feel that way. And I even think that, like, you get to not want to listen to me anymore or to, like, trust me anymore. Like, I think that's the cost, is that I have to, like, deal with the fact that me trying to say this thing and win this like petty back and forth with this other creator, is that in doing that, I willingly told a lie to talk about the topic of intellectual honesty and integrity. And in doing that, there's probably some smudge that I'm not going to be able to ignore or walk away from, that I have to live with. And again, I don't think that this is going to have a ripple effect the size of Oppenheimer's or the size of Andrew Wakefield's or the size of Patrick Moore's, but it's something. It's there. It's real. Fern Love Band says, Austin Archer on YouTube, Austin Archer, yeah, it's a little crappy. You're human, it turns out. And I appreciate that response. And I think that, like, that's a totally valid response too, to be in my audience and be like, not your best moment, not your sharpest stuff. You're capable of, like, better content than that. You're capable of making your point without going to that place. I will say this, a lot of people, a lot of the feedback was, I wish you hadn't stooped to his level. And I will push back on that. I push back on that feedback because I don't think this is where, like, the moral absolutism, I think, bothers me, is like, Jeff Mead has spent the last however long of his life building a platform that's based on spreading misinformation and lies and racist propaganda. I would have to stoop so much lower to get to his level. Me tricking Jeff Mead into, like, showing that he lies to his audience and then giving money to charity is not stooping to Jeff Mead's level. And I wish we would sort of retire that language around stuff like this. Like, when someone punches Richard Spencer in the face, it's like, oh, well, now you stoop to his level. It's like, no, they did not. Is punching people okay? No. Should we, as people who are on the right side of history and trying to be the more integrous people, try to find better ways of communicating than punching? Yes. Does punching Richard Spencer in the face make you as bad as Richard Spencer? Absolutely the fuck not, unless you're also a Nazi. Unless you're also a Nazi, then you are not as bad as Richard Spencer for punching Richard Spencer in the face. You can punch him in the face. So what did Patrick say that I missed? Patrick said on YouTube, I think the biggest cost is that the cost of the lie doesn't really outweigh the benefit of the lie. Yeah, and I don't know. I think that that's a good point too. But I don't know. Like I said, the overwhelming majority of people in my audience were fine with it. Like, the vast majority of people who watched the video where I showed that I gave the money to charity instead were like, hell yeah, fuck yeah. Like, so like, I don't know. I don't think that there is like a cost to this that's like drowning out the $1,000 that I gave to those organizations. I don't really think that it's that dire. I do think there is a cost though that I wanted to address. I think that there's something that like I have to live with the fact that like some people are just going to feel some type of way about me now. And I'm totally okay with living with Jeff Mead's audience. They're, like I said, they're all up here in the TikTok comments, just being so butthurt. And like cry harder, seethe harder, cope harder. I'm totally all right with that. I will live with that all day long. I never wanted your respect anyway, and I can do without it. But there are some people, there are people close to me even, who might be like, I'm not super sure how I feel about this. This makes me feel a little icky. And I'm with you on that. I'm not sure how I feel about it. It makes me feel a little bit like, yeah, I could have done better. I could have done this in a better way. I could have done this in a cleaner way. Now, another way, I mean, I've thought about so many different ways of like, how do I pay the cost of this? And one way I was like, well, I guess I could just pay Jeff. But then I'm like, does that do it? Is that what like cleanses this, is like paying Jeff Mead money? Does that, and I really genuinely think that me giving Jeff Mead money is worse than me lying to Jeff Mead. I genuinely believe that. I genuinely believe that like ethically and morally, it's worse to give Jeff Mead money than it is to lie to Jeff Mead. Like I just do. And so I'm like, I think that that's not the way to live with the cost. I don't think that that's, and I don't think that that like, I don't think that that earns me any kind of like cred back. I don't think anyone in Jeff's audience is going to be like, you know what? I was wrong about that guy. He's cool. He paid off that bet. I'm like, I don't think anybody's going to change their mind. But I think that the thing that like is more lasting that I should live with is just like, this might change the way that some people who used to like me think about me. This might change the way that some people who used to trust me think about me. And that's something that I think I have to own and live with. And that's something for a person like me who makes their living from having the trust of an audience. It's not insignificant, but like I said, it's a small amount of people. But I don't want to diminish the significance of and the reality of those people. Let's see here. Somebody just said on Jordan Doppelblower on TikTok said, like, trying to make being charitable villainous is wild. That is the funny thing about like what Jeff Mead's audience is doing, is they're like livid about this, about like how unjust this is. And at the end of the day, it's like, I gave money to like three really good causes. So you're just like, the whole debate was over like whether or not this song is racist and whether or not like all of y'all who are boosting this song and using it as your anthem are all like loving the racial dog whistles in the song. And then I give money to racial justice organizations and you're all like through the roof mad about it. It doesn't really help your case that you're not racist, I'm just going to say. It just sort of makes you look racist. Let's see what else we got here. Jatheus says, I think tricking a person into telling the truth is fine. Yeah, again, it's like, we like this moral absolutism of like, is lying bad? Yes. are there situations where you can understand it more, or where you can be like, that's not the most consequential lie. That's not an Andrew Wakefield level lie. It reminds me a lot of, like, when it was first happening, I was thinking about Kyle Scheel a lot. Do you guys know who Kyle Scheel is? This is a guy who, and he's still doing all right. I'm glad he is. I'm glad that Kyle Scheel's still out there making content. But Kyle Scheel made this video a few years ago where he was doing a prank, and I'm going to put that in quotes, a prank video where the prank was he was going to see if this Flying J would let him put a, or maybe it was a come and go, I don't know. Would let him put a cardboard cutout of him in their store if he just sort of walked in and was like, hey, I'm with the cardboard cutout people. We're supposed to put this in the store. And that was like, that was the prank. And it was a cardboard cutout of him selling something called Scheel's Meals. And the whole idea of the prank was that, like, he was tricking this gas station into letting him put this cardboard cutout for this fake product in their gas station. And it came out that this was actually a promo that Kyle Scheel was doing with Flying J or Come and Go, and that they were aware of it the whole time and they were in on the prank. People lost their goddamn minds. People went insane about this guy lying about this prank. And to this day, I just don't understand it. It's one of the most insane cases of a person getting canceled I've ever witnessed. I'm just like, in my mind, I'm like, hey, y'all, it was a prank video on the internet. Those are always fake. Like, those are never true. Those are always lies. Like, what is happening here? Like, he didn't hurt anybody. He didn't, like no, but, like, he pretended to do a prank with Flying J, and people lost their mind because, like, the principle of lying. They just were like, but he lied. But he lied, and people got so dug in on this moral absolutist position of lying. And I've seen this in my comments a lot where people are just like, but you lied. But you lied. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter why. It doesn't matter who you lied to. It doesn't matter the context. You lied. And I'm like, I think context does kind of matter. I think that it sort of does matter. There are different cultures that, like, have cultural practices around telling certain lies. Think of the movie The Farewell, where, based on a true story of this woman realizing that culturally, her family who lives in China, where her family's from, she was raised in the U.S., her family has a cultural practice of not talking about or lying about terminal illness. And they find out that her Nainai is dying of terminal cancer, and they don't tell her Nainai because that's how they deal with it. Is they don't, like, that's just their cultural practice. And there's this sort of Western lens. A lot of people went and saw that movie, The Farewell, and they watched that movie and they just went, no, that's not right. That's not okay. You have to tell that person that they're dying of terminal cancer. And it's like, yeah, but that's us painting our cultural norm onto another culture and our cultural standard of how to deal with death and grieving onto them by saying a lie is a lie is a lie, and that's bad. And I don't think that that's the right thing to do in that situation. Afro Chicken on YouTube says, he didn't disclose that it was paid advertising. It was less he lied and more that he presented the whole thing as a fun, organic thing his audience participated in. Yeah, I just don't give a fuck. Like, who cares? I just, like, I could not be bothered to think that he should be canceled for that. I just am like, so what? Like, it's media. Like, so much of what you're watching is people lying to you to entertain you. That's, like, it's like Galaxy Quest, the sweet alien race that Balthazar is a part of, what are their names? I can't remember what their names are, but you know, the people, never surrender, never give up, those people, when they find out that Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver are actors on a show and they don't understand what that is because they live in a culture that where lying doesn't exist, they're like, Tim Allen has to tell him, he goes, we pretended. And Balthazar's like, I don't understand what you're saying. And he goes, we lied, Balthazar. We lied. We told lies. And it just breaks Balthazar's heart. But it's like, on Earth, we do that. we pretend and we lie to tell truths, to tell stories, and to like, I just, we need your help, says Bandy Buck on YouTube. Great movie, all time classic. But like this thing of just like, what's his name? Sheel. He told us that we were part of this prank, and it turned out that it was a stunt with the company. It's like, who the fuck cares? Like, so what? He didn't like tell some kid with cancer that he was going to cure their cancer and then lie about it. Like, that's not what happened. Who cares? It reminds me of the Chris Farley sketch from SNL where they trick him into drinking Colombian coffee crystals, and they go, sir, are you aware that you're drinking Colombian coffee crystals? And Chris Farley goes, you son of a bitch. You lied to me. It's like, you're being so extra. Like, you're being so over the top about, like, a very harmless lie. Some lies people know are lies and are consenting to it, like magicians. This is what Patrick Kennedy just said on YouTube. Yeah, exactly. You want the magician to lie to you. You want the magician to pretend that they're magic. You're willfully being lied to. I think people even do that when they watch like Ancient Aliens documentaries and stuff like that. Like, a big part of you knows that these people are probably lying to you or just making stuff up, but you like sort of want to be lied to because it feels good. And I think everyone that had a good time with Kyle Scheel's video was like, I had fun. And at the end of the day, it's like, it was fun. And then you found out like, like you saw how the magic trick was done. You saw behind the curtain and it was like, oh, that's less fun. It's more fun when I didn't know that. But it's not like the ramifications of Kyle Scheel's lie will live on for generations. No one will ever trust internet prank videos ever again. It's like, who cares? It's an internet prank video. Internet prank videos are always lies. Afro Chicken says, I'm not sure if you could even say he was canceled, right? I don't remember there being people saying he was trash or immoral. Oh no, it was big. It was big. He got big time canceled. He lost like 2 million followers on social media, maybe even more. It was like significant, like a full on legitimate. He's still okay. He had a big enough platform that he survived it, but like, it was not in like in my situation here with Jeff, I've got like a few hundred people in my audience who were like pretty pressed about it. Kyle Scheel had millions of people really pressed to the point of like making videos about how everyone should deplatform him and no one should trust him ever again. It was significant. Somebody just said, Edie Britt on TikTok says, I don't have a dog in this fight, but we are only as good as our word. That was a thing I kept seeing in the comments over and over again, too, is like, well, now your word means nothing. And I will say that, like, I think that this sentiment is like kind of corny and like it just feels a little like melodramatic. But again, this is the cost. This is the cost, is that like some people like Edie are going to think that my word means nothing now, even though it's like, again, it's like, I don't just lie willy-nilly. I'm not just out here lying about vaccines or about climate change or about like really significant things. I'm not lying about like, Matt Walsh went on Joe Rogan's podcast and talked about how like there's been like 100,000 kids in the last year who have had gender reassignment surgery. And Joe Rogan looked it up right in front of him and was like, says here, it's like less than 2,000. And Matt Walsh was like, well, yeah, I knew the number was significant. It's like, oh, you just said a number. You just said some insane number. And you can show Matt Walsh fans a clip of Matt Walsh doing that, and they won't care. Telling a significant, massive lie. And that's not the kind of lie. I don't do that. I don't do that on my show, on my podcast, on my platform. Those aren't the kinds of lies I told. I lied to a liar, I scammed a scammer, I grifted a grifter. And if you want to take that single example and mean and extrapolate it to mean nothing you say is worth anything anymore, that is your right to do that, and that is the cost of me doing that, is like you having that reaction. I will just say I find that reaction to be a little like I said, melodramatic. Like every time that I would read a comment from someone who would be like, your word is broken. Your word means nothing. Like I couldn't help but read it in a voice that was someone being like, and now your word has been broken forever. and now your word shall never be repaired. Like, it, there's just like so many people who commented who were like, a man is only as strong as the word that he stands upon. And if his word is ever violated, that man hath no strength left. I just was like, it's a little much. Like, people are pretending like I like, you know, was doing like Holocaust denial or something. But like, I'm like, I think you could say the same thing to Kyle Scheel, where it's just like, and now your word means nothing. And it's like, it's fine. Like, he did a brand deal and they played a little like fast one on you. It's okay. Like, you don't need to be like, Kyle Scheel is the same as Andrew Wakefield now. It's like, no, he's not. But, and this is important. You are allowed to think that, and that is the cost. That is the cost that I will have to live with as a result of making the choice to tell this lie, is that, like, some people are going to be like, I'm an absolutist on this. It's all or nothing. Like, you tell one lie, then nothing you've said matters after that point. And that is, like, how some people's internal moral ethical compass works. Again, I think I don't think that moral absolutism is like very realistic, but knowing that that's just how some people's internal barometer works, that is a consequence I'm going to have to live with. Sage K253 on YouTube says, I'm always curious about the people who say the whole you're only worth your word, think about things lying to survive or save someone else. Yeah, again, it's like there are all kinds of situations where like people might tell a necessary lie. And if you boil it down to just like a lie is a lie is a lie, lying is bad no matter what, there never can be a situation where a lie could be understood. The motivation for a lie could be justified or noble. It just is what it is. I don't think that you're operating with a worldview that is A, very charitable, or B, like I said, very realistic. I don't think it's very realistic. I think it's a little bit like you're living in a fantasy realm a little bit, like of knights and like people of honor who like would never besmirch their word. Like I don't think you're living in the real world where like people do sometimes be lying. Just telling our kids that Santa exists. Religion, anybody? Just lying to people about like God and hell so that people will be good, so that people won't kill each other. Like, I don't know, you know? Actually, all acting is lies, isn't it? 100%. I am a professional liar. Like, it's what I do for my job. Like, I pretend to be someone I'm not. I pretend to have values that I don't have. I pretend to have beliefs that I don't have for entertainment and storytelling. If we are so hard-lined that, like, your word is everything, we don't leave much space in society for, like, where things like what I did can live. And again, I'm going to sit here and say, as a content creator, it's not my favorite thing I've ever done or made, and I don't think it's, like, my best work. I think it could have been executed better. But I don't think that, like, I want Jeff Mead to have my money. I don't. I just think that, like, I probably shouldn't have offered him my money in the first place. I don't think I needed to do that, you know? And I think that, like, very literally, that stunt did cost me $1,000. Cost me $1,000 to do that stunt. I had to pay that $1,000. But overall, it's like, it's just, like, kind of clunky. The messaging that I was trying to go for kind of came out muddy, and I don't like that. So it's just like not up to my standard of like how I want my content to be and my messaging to be. But yeah, there's a cost. Like, I have to like morally and ethically grapple with it. And I have to like listen to people give me feedback every single day for the last 10 days being like, I don't know about this. I don't know how I feel about this. And I have to be like, that's okay. That's okay that you don't know how you feel about it. And obviously, I have to deal with the cost of, like, I think if it was just the cost of dealing with Jeff's butthurt fans, y'all, that would be enough. They are insufferable. As okay with them being mad as I am, they are, God, there's a lot of them. Jeff has about 1 million followers, and they are, they will not shut up. And they are just the worst. They're just the worst. And I did say this, I said this on a live, but like, I do want people on the left to like be wary of getting moral lectures from people who think Donald Trump is a good person. You know, it's like when people on the left say things like, oh, you stooped to their level now, you went down, you were sullied, you stooped to their level. I'm like, remember, like you're watching these people say, that guy lied. He lied too. And your conscience is feeling some type of way about that because you like me and you genuinely trust me. And then that makes you feel bad. But like, I just am like, hey, be careful that you're not allowing yourself to be lectured to by people who think that like Matt Walsh and Ben Shapiro and fucking Steve Crowder and Donald Trump are like good voices of reason in the world. Be careful that you're not letting those people tell you what's good and what's bad and like what is like honorable and what is dishonorable. Like, don't let those people morally lecture to you. Stanzi Potenza, a friend of mine, a content creator friend of mine, made this video after the Glitch McConnell thing happened, after Mitch McConnell had like a little like half stroke glitch out at a podium. You know, where people were like, it was basically a conversation between two people where she makes a joke about Mitch McConnell glitching out and the other person's like, hey, come on, like, don't stoop to their level. Like, we're better than that. Don't make fun of Mitch McConnell. Like, we can be better than that. And she makes the point that it's like, I'm not stooping to Mitch McConnell's level. I would have to go so much lower to get to Mitch McConnell's level. And I think that that happens. I think that those responses, this happened when the Titan submarine imploded and people were making fun of that, where people were like, hey, come on, they're still people. They're still human beings. And I'm like, I feel some kind of way about making fun of people when they die. And I feel personally some kind of way about making fun of Mitch McConnell when he's having a health emergency. That's just me. The same way that like, it does something to me internally to watch Richard Spencer get punched in the face. I don't like Richard Spencer at all, but something inside of me is like, I don't like punching. I don't like when people punch. And there's something inside of me when someone makes fun of an old man having a stroke that's like, I don't care if he's like an evil old man, if he's like the most evil old man, like, it doesn't make me feel good. That being said, if you want to make fun of him and if you want to love watching Richard Spencer get punched in the face, I think that's totally valid and totally okay, because I don't think that like, and I don't think that makes you in any way, shape, or form as bad as those people. I don't think it makes you in any way, shape, or form as bad as Richard Spencer, as bad as Mitch McConnell. And I really like, if you're out there in my audience and you're seeing Jeff Mead's audience get really, really butthurt and freak out and be like, well, this makes you guys just as bad, don't buy it for a second. Don't buy it for a second. You're still on the side of like racial justice and progress and like confronting the reality of police brutality and like institutional racism and the ineffectiveness and the rot that exists in America's police force and in conservative America. You're still on the side of like standing up for truth and honesty and reason. Just because some guy that you follow told a little lie to a person who lies every single day does not make you or me as bad. That's just, so don't take the bait and let them morally lecture to you. That's something I worry about with this situation. That being said, again, it's like, you get to have your feelings. You get to have your feelings, you know? Somebody said, I want a name for Jeff's snowflakes. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what we could call them, but they are, boy, they are big mad. Patrick Kennedy says, are billionaires actually people though? Yeah, it's like that when the Titan thing happened and people were like, don't make fun of people who just died. It's like, they're billionaires though. They are the supervillains of Earth, as we discussed earlier in this episode. They're the worst people alive. Like they are the people who could fix everything and who are perpetrating the lies that keep things broken just so that they can have more money that doesn't mean anything to them. They don't even, it's not even useful for them to have that money. That's how fucking evil they are. Is like, I just want the money just to have it, just so other people don't and I do. I'll create a whole ass charitable foundation just so I can funnel money through it and keep more of my money that I don't need. Sage K253 says, the only one I feel bad about is Dudeface's kid. Sure. Yeah. Rich guy's kid gets killed because his dad is an idiot. Sure. You know, there's a non-zero chance that he was going to grow up to be a terrible, greedy billionaire himself, though. Just so you know. And again, you know, like, I think that it's valid to have a feeling about me saying something like that. To be like, I don't like the way that that feels. I don't like the way that it feels to, like, dance on someone's grave or something like that. That's valid. But, like, I just also think that, like, you gotta take it in the scope of what we're talking about here. That, like, I'm essentially, like, I don't think, a lot of the people that feel that way, it's like, I don't think that you would feel that way about me talking about, like, that about, like, Hitler, or about, like, Jeffrey Dahmer, or about, I don't know, like, John Wayne Gacy. But, like, if it's a billionaire, you're like, oh, is he really that bad? It's like, no, he's worse than all of those people. Worse than all of them. Like, yeah, yes. Yes, he is. So keep it in the scope, and... And boy, I'll tell you, Jeff Mead is a charming young man. He is a charming lad. And a lot of people, I think, see Jeff Mead and they're like, oh, I don't know. Should we be lying to him? And it's like, no, Jeff Mead's doing bad stuff. He doesn't need to be, but he's out there doing the Andrew Wakefield shuffle. He's out there doing the Patrick Moore shuffle. He's out there, like, trying to get a bag by lying to people. Period. Love your content. Do you have a Patreon link so we can support? Of course, link in my bio. Patreon.com/AustinArcher, baby. Link in my bio on all my socials. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Thanks for bringing that up. We get to do it in the show. And we're going to wrap the show up because I think that we got... Austin, is this available on Spotify? It sure is. The show's on Spotify. It's on Apple Podcasts. You can watch the video version on YouTube. I'm here on YouTube right now. Yeah. Yeah, all the things. This is the show. Thank you so much for your comments, for your feedback. If you're out there and you feel some kind of way about this story I just told you, I see you, and that's okay, and that's totally all right. And I'm gonna have to grapple with that and live with that. That's what I get. All right. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. You can get it all there, austin-archer.com, or by looking up Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Yo, somebody just mentioned it. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. That's a thing where you can support the content that I make, this podcast, all of it. The people who are over there contributing to Patreon.com/AustinArcher are the lifeblood of this operation. I love them from the bottom of my soul. I can't even explain how much I love them. Thank you so much to all of them. They're the real ones, the realest ones. But all of you who are here watching and contributing with your comments and your feedback, thank you so much for participating. It was really it was a good show because of you. You all, somebody said, so I'm bad? No. Everyone who's here, you're all good, and I love you all very much. You're all my little sweet babies, very much. Okie dokie. I think. Oh, and Fern said there's YouTube exclusive content, no less. There is. I'm making video essays. YouTube exclusive content. Go subscribe to my YouTube channel. It's great. There's all this extra stuff. I'm sweating. I'm hot. Yo, it's been hot in Los Angeles, and I'm over it. I'm done with it. I'll see you next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. I love you so much. Bye-bye. It's a long way to get to being single. Wanting something to be right so much you push it off your life is the thing, though. If any-